Recently, the Detroit Press investigated what happens to properties that are foreclosed upon because of delinquent taxes. It is a complicated tale that very often ends up with a once well-kept house deteriorating into a blighted property, and of course, that pulls down the whole neighborhood. The author of the report is Allie Gross, and she joins us now. Tell us how you went about looking into this issue, because the number of houses that are auctioned off because of tax foreclosures is immense, but you started following just 23 Detroit properties. Why?
When I was on Breaking News, on the Breaking News desk at the Free Press, I was sent over a Zillow ad for a house on the east side, $4,000, east side house. There may be a friendly squatter inside, is what the ad said. And it was funny, but at the same time, I was curious, how could someone own a house and be unsure whether or not another person was living inside of it? That seemed peculiar to me. So I decided to go to the Wayne County Register of Deeds and track the property's history. And what I found was it was owned by a company called Elite Value Properties. It was based in Los Angeles. And so using Nexus, I was able to track down the owner of Elite Value Properties. And that's how I started talking to William Joseph Whitaker. He's based in LA. He went to kind of what you could describe as a get-rich-fast class in Indiana. And he decided to start investing in real estate. He bought two properties in Indiana, and then he came back to his home and an apartment in LA, which I thought was kind of this irony. He couldn't afford real estate in his hometown. And a friend had told him Detroit's hot, and he decided to purchase 23 properties in Detroit. He kind of was saying, this was a complete mess. I shouldn't have done this. It was way over his head. He bought them sight unseen, but I decided to kind of track back and trace those 23 properties.
So this speculator, Elite Value Properties, it's only one of several investment companies buying up houses at tax foreclosure auctions. Do these investment companies actually know what they're buying? Apparently he did not. Do the others?
I think it's a mix. With him, what I thought was so interesting when I first talked to him, which was in January, I walked into this kind of thinking speculators, it sounds like a dirty word, speculators are bad. But he truly, I think, didn't know what he was doing. He was so far away from the homes that I don't think he realized the harm that he was causing to the neighborhoods that he was purchasing these homes in. They were just, at that point, they weren't homes anymore. They were properties. And so he bought them. I don't think he realized that, and he quickly offloaded them. But I think one of the things that really stood out to me was these homes, when they go to the tax auction, 23 homes I focused on, they were lost in either 2012 or 2013. The point of the tax auction, it's to recoup funds, and it's also to reactivate abandoned space. When I looked at these 23 houses, 78% of them, looking at Google Map images, they appeared to be occupied in 2011, so the year before the auction. And by the spring, when I was looking at them and visiting all of them, 78% of them were either abandoned, burned down, or demolished by the city.
Wow. So maybe that's what you get to, because you wrote with the cheap prices and the ability to buy a home via an online auction, just a mouse click away, Detroit ends up with this chaotic reality. Can you further explain that?
Sure. I mean, I think one of the things we hear a lot right now, Detroit's hot, like the real estate market's hot there. But I think what you even see with that original Zillow ad for $4,000, when you actually looked, that's how much the taxes were owed on the house. So the property market, it's not determined by typical things when you think of with a property market. It's not the schools nearby or the amenities that are nearby, the parks. It's determined by property taxes owed. And that shows, I think, a really chaotic and dysfunctional system.
And one of the odd things is you wrote none of the speculators that you looked into paid property taxes on the houses they purchased. Why not?
Yeah, I think you're keying into something that I also thought was really interesting. 60% of these 23 houses ended up back in the 2016 auction. If one of the speculators, they can't make money immediately off the house, they're going to just sell it. But there's no point with speculation. You're trying to make a profit, and paying property taxes is going to take away from your profit. Fixing up the house is going to take away from that profit. So what you see many of the speculators doing is they're either renting the houses out, but in these kind of predatory land contracts that really disadvantage the renter, or they're letting them just sit and lay fallow, hoping that some development around the property will make it more valuable that they can then sell it for more money, or that they can sell it to someone unassuming like William Joseph Whitaker, who doesn't understand the real estate market in Detroit and will pay a certain amount because they think they're getting a good deal.
I'm glad you brought up land contracts, because some of these houses, as you mentioned, end up in these kind of rent-to-own land contracts where the buyer and renter, buyer/renter, is also expected to pay the property taxes. So how does that work out?
So not all 23, but I want to say 20 of the 23 homes were originally bought at auction by a local company that no longer exists called Benji Gates. And their kind of scheme sounds like a bad word, but the way that they work, their business model. Their business model was that they would have these land contracts where people who potentially lost their homes could stay in their homes, and kind of a rent-to-own system. But the problem with a lot of these land contracts is they are essentially private. You don't need to file the land contracts with, for example, the Wayne County Register of Deeds. And so a lot of times people can be taken advantage of, where unless the contract explicitly gives the potential owner, you know, rights, they can end up, as was the case with the home that I focused on, the man who lost his house. It was purchased by Benji Gates for about $1,000 at auction. And then he, 3 years later, 2 years later, was evicted over $3,000 of unpaid rent. So he owed that money, but he also owed the property taxes. It creates a system where I would imagine it would be very hard for someone who already lost their house because of cash flow problems to pay for their house that they already owned, plus property taxes.
Plus property taxes. So what kind of regulations are there regarding these land contracts?
So last year, there were efforts to draft legislation that would have regulated the land contracts. And Lori Brown, who's the co-director of Michigan Law Poverty Program, she had been working on those provisions. When I spoke with her last month, she was talking about how that kind of stalled. And so right now, there really isn't anything. You have people paying, and they have the responsibilities of home ownership, but they don't necessarily have the protections that would come with that.
So many of these investor-owned houses just sit empty. And
yeah.
Then soon the scrappers descend, and now it's vacant, it's stripped of any value. Why would investors buy property if they're not going to visit it, they're not going to keep it up, they're not going to mow the lawn? What's the point?
There's a hope for profit.
So they're thinking if they just sit on that property, even though it's deteriorating the whole time, what do they care? Because they've only got $1,000 into it. And when that neighborhood bounces back, they're going to get rich.
They could get rich. But also, I think Josh Ackers, who is at University of Michigan Dearborn, he started Property Praxis, which tracks speculation in the city. I think he kind of put it perfectly, where at the end of the day, if you just put in, let's say you buy the house for $1,000, you're not paying property taxes. If it doesn't go well, it goes back to auction. It's off your hands. It's such a slow risk to take part in this kind of gamble, but the consequences are really felt in the neighborhood. Something that kind of stood out to me, so when I started working on this, I thought I was just going to be working on this squatter house. And I kept going to the house every day, and the person who was squatting in the house wouldn't talk to me. That's when I decided to go to some of the other 23 houses to see maybe there's a story with one of them. But what happened as I was going is I'm bouncing around the east side, the west side, and slowly you're starting to realize, oh, this house is burned down. Oh, this house is vacant now. And you start putting together the dots that this is kind of the systemic issue in the neighborhoods where they've really been deteriorating in the past 5 years. I think that's the part that really stood out to me. When we think of kind of the emptying out of Detroit neighborhoods, you think of kind of white flight, or you think of disinvestment in the 80s and 90s, or you think of kind of the subprime mortgage crisis. You don't necessarily think of the past 5 years.
You know, I spent a year in one neighborhood in Detroit called Morningside.
Yeah.
And the neighbors know what's going on.
Yeah.
They're all aware that these are owned by investment companies who never visit, and they squarely blame these kinds of speculators for the deterioration of some of their neighborhoods.
Yeah. No, I see that so much. I think the other thing, though, is I was talking to some of the neighbors, because I would go to each house with kind of the history from the Wayne County Register of Deeds. Well, this was owned by this person, and then it got sold to a California company and then a Florida company. A lot of times neighbors didn't know necessarily sometimes that a company in Florida owns the house next door to you. They just see kind of sometimes a deteriorating home and wondering, why is this happening? Someone was taking care of this 4 years ago. I think the other thing that stood out, I moved to Detroit in 2010, And in that 8-year period, we've seen a lot of new development. When I talk to people, they say Detroit's changed so much, and they're often talking about changing for the better. I think this piece, going from neighborhood to neighborhood, you're seeing that in that same amount of time, some of these neighborhoods have actually been deteriorating at a pretty rapid clip.
Ali Gross reported the investigative piece in the Free Press titled Detroit Real Estate Game Creates Chaos in Neighborhoods. Thanks for coming in and talking with me.
Thank you for having me.